Hi and welcome to What's Next. My name is Christine Heinonen and today on the show we have James Cridlin, Head of Future Media and Technology at the BBC. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how to encourage innovation and creativity in a large traditional media company. And you told me a bit earlier that you have something which is like a Google-inspired employee system or benefit. Could you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So I look after the future media and technology team within the audio music area, which looks after the radio stations and our music and our music stuff as well. And one of the things that we spotted is that really there are some people, whether they're software engineers, whether they're creatives, very creative people, like to be able to come up with ideas. So we give them something that we call 10% time. And really there's one rule to your 10% time. You can spend 10% of your time a week, which is about an afternoon a week. You can spend that doing things that will benefit the BBC, whether it's benefiting us internally or benefiting us externally. And you can really spend as much or as little time as you want within that 10%, of course, to work on new ideas.
Do they have to come up with something, or is it kind of free-for-all, browse interesting websites, whatever you like?
What we generally do is we have a meeting sort of once every month of, I've come up with this idea, what do people think? And generally, actually, people end up growing on the ideas and thinking, oh, that's really clever. What would happen if it did this as well? And so on and so forth. But I think it's really important to make sure that you don't have tons of different rules there, and to throw lots of process, lots of form filling, all of that kind of stuff. We really try and leave it as fluid as we possibly can. Some people end up using it just as a way of clearing their minds. So they might do something for 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, in between other things that they end up having to do.
So what are the results so far? What are people coming up with?
So one of the very first things that we did was the iPhone had just been announced, hadn't actually come out yet at the time when we started, and we wanted to make podcasts available for people who had iPhones. So we worked on an iPhone compatible site, worked out how to get audio working through an iPhone website, through the Safari browser. This was back in the days when there were no apps in there, of course. And that was the first piece of 10% time that actually went live fairly fast. So, so that was a good example. I mean, other examples are on the front of the Radio 1 site for until quite recently. There was an interesting list that, again, started as a piece of 10% time work, where we looked at the most popular words in the incoming SMS text messages. So lots of people were saying, I'm feeling really happy, or this is a really good song, or why are you feeling so grumpy this morning, Chris? All of that kind of thing. And we would pull the most used words, taking off all of the swearing, which of course was always the most used words, and then making sure that was on the Radio 1 site as almost a kind of a snapshot as to how our audience was feeling. So lots of interesting small ideas such as that.
And you're coming up with something pretty soon called Moose, was it?
It's a site called, we're thinking about calling it Mooso at the moment. So it's a mix between a moose, for reasons best known to the person who's making it, and Muso. And the idea is it's a game. And the idea is that you're playing this game against other people who are listening to the radio station at the same time. You listen to a particular track. You have to type in as many tags, if you like, about this particular track as you can, and the more that matches with the other people that you're the other person that you're playing against, the more points that you get. And we all know what points mean. Points don't mean prizes in our case, because we won't be handing any out, but there will be a leaderboard and everything else. But of course what we get out of that is we get a fantastic, not only a fun game to end up playing, but we also get a fantastic amount of data around the music that we play on our radio stations, which will be really, really useful for us in the future.
And Google did a similar clever thing with pictures, right, which gave them a lot of metadata on pictures. But this is a problem that you share with other traditional media companies or very old media companies, that you have lots of content that you need to distribute in different ways, you need to organize it. Are you thinking about more ways of letting your community into the site and helping you out with this?
Yes, we've done a couple of, again, a couple of sort of research ideas, a couple of R&D ideas. I should explain, I've got a team of two people who work in our R&D team. And one of the things that they came up with is a way of taking some of our speech programming and annotating it, adding more information. So there's a very good... there's a very good radio program that goes out on Radio 4, which is one of our most popular podcasts, called In Our Time. And it's a really intellectual podcast all about philosophy and science and things that are far too clever for me to understand. And clearly, you know, there is tremendous amount of information in there which you can then point people to find out more about. And so we allowed the audience to annotate all of that audio and to actually point you to more places on Wikipedia, on other sites that would actually explain more about what was being talked about. So I think that there is a ton of ways that you can engage your audience, ways of actually getting your audience to do some of that, almost some of that work for you. Because you do have an awful lot of audience who are fans of what you do.
But the usual reaction to that among traditional media workers is fear. How can we trust that they're doing the right thing, that they're tagging with the right kind of metadata? How are you discussing this in the BBC?
I think that there are a number of challenges such as that. There's a number of challenges in terms of, so for example, our new music site at bbc.co.uk/music has a lot of biographies from Wikipedia. Now, we know that Wikipedia is clearly 100% accurate, but let's just say that it wasn't. The beauty of Wikipedia is, yes, it's very easy for people to change Wikipedia, but it's also very easy for people to change Wikipedia back again. And actually, for the most part, Wikipedia is a very good, accurate piece of work, and it's, you know, it's very clear that kind of philosophy of giving people the power to change something generally leads to good and not leads to bad. And clearly we need to look at how we moderate some of those changes, making sure that we don't allow inappropriate language and all that kind of thing in there. But it's certainly something that you know, we've been experimenting with quite a lot, and you tend to begin to understand how you can allow people to end up doing that. I mean, one of the things that's been talked about recently is the BBC's idea of giving users a page of their own with their favourite programmes and all of that kind of stuff. Now, other radio stations are already looking at the idea of scoring a listener, of how good a listener they are. So if you look at Absolute Radio in the UK, for example, they give people kudos, they give people scores, so that they can actually work up and say, I'm the VIP of the day because I did something really, really good on the site. I posted a nice photograph, I posted a nice blog post, and all of that kind of thing. So I think that there are broadcasters who are learning how to almost encourage their audience to end up doing the right thing on sites as well.
This reminds me of an interview that I did this fall with one of the guys behind I Can Has Cheeseburger, the huge lolcat community. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned the same thing as you said, like giving points, just little things of recognition to really inspire your users to feel special. And social media is affecting the way traditional media are thinking in a big way now, it seems. Mm. I read that you're actually hiring a head of social media at the BBC.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a number of... I think one of the things about the BBC, and I've been there for 20 months now, one of the things about it is that there are an awful lot of people that really understand how things work. And we already have a very talented social media executive within the radio side, a guy called Jem Stone, who does a really good job in getting our audience involved in what we do, but also getting the radio stations involved in talking to the audiences. So Radio 4, our speech service, now has a almost daily blog from the controller of the radio station which has been tremendously popular with that audience, and something that the Radio 4 audience, which is generally an older, more traditional audience, we were really interested to see how that would pan out. So whether it's the work of Jem over at in radio, or there's a similar contact within BBC Television, a person with the ridiculous name of Rue Reynolds, and Rue actually does the same kind of thing for many of our TV shows as well. So, you know, there is a tremendous amount of knowledge there. I think what you end up getting, of course, if you have five social media specialists in a room, then firstly, of course, they're not talking to each other then, they're actually on Twitter or Facebook. But secondly, they actually all work in slightly different ways. And so one of the problems that we have is just making sure that the BBC acts in one way. And that, you know, if we're going to use photographs from Flickr, for example, then we all have a clear understanding of how we should be behaving, how we should use those photographs, and what we shouldn't be doing. Which in a company of 23,000-24,000 people is quite a stretch.
But do you think that will be a common title in the future, head of social media? Do you actually feel that you need one, or is it just because BBC is so large and so complex that you need that one person setting a direction?
Well, I think it's the size of the BBC clearly means that you need to have some kind of cohesive plan. But I think that any media company or any web company needs to have some understanding of the social media space. And what's been very interesting, for example, in the conference that you and I have been at all day, has been one person from a public service broadcaster somewhere in Europe, shall we say, who had some really, really interesting content on his site, but was told by management he was not allowed to put it on Facebook, not allowed to put it on Twitter, not allowed to put it anywhere where audiences that might not visit his site would see it, because, well, that will take traffic away from his site, which I don't believe isn't necessarily right. But I think that's probably a really clear example of how some people don't necessarily get how social media works, and indeed how the web works. And actually, there is then clearly a need for somebody to actually say, well, actually, if we did it this way, then this might work really, really well.
Thank you, James Cridland, for joining What's Next. Where can we follow your work online?
Oh, well, you can have a look at my blog, which is james.cridland.net/blog, which has a lot of stuff about radio, about new platforms, and about beer.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.